Earlier today, Lewis Scooter Libby, the vice president's chief of staff, was indicted on 5 felonies, 2 counts of providing false information, 2 counts of perjury, 1 count of obstruction of justice, all of this relating back to the case of who leaked the name of Valerie Plame, an undercover CIA agent who was exposed as such in a column by syndicated columnist Robert Novak back in July of 2003. And what we're hearing now, NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg, what we're hearing now is that that name was leaked and that Lewis Libby was at the beginning of a chain of telephone calls that exposed that identity.
That's right. And what the indictment says, in the words of Patrick Fitzgerald, he said, look, Mr. Libby told the FBI and he told the grand jury twice each that he was at the end of the food chain, that he kept hearing from reporters that Valerie Plame was, that Ambassador Wilson's wife was a CIA, worked for the CIA, but that he didn't know anything about it, but that he'd heard that. In fact, says Prosecutor Fitzgerald, Lewis Libby was at the beginning of the food chain spreading the information, and that he well knew that she worked at the CIA, and that he well knew that this was secret and classified information.
Don Gagne, any reaction as yet from the White House? NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne.
We are expecting to hear from the president for the first time on this as he walks across the South Lawn to get into the chopper to go to Camp David at about 3:50, somewhere in there, Eastern time. At least that's when he is scheduled to depart. We do have a statement from the Office of the Vice President, this from Vice President Cheney. I have accepted his decision with deep regret, referring, of course, to Scooter Libby. Then he says, Scooter Libby is one of the most capable and talented individuals I have ever known. He has given many years of his life to public service and has served our nation tirelessly and with great distinction. The vice president goes on to say here in this statement that an accused person is presumed innocent and that Mr. Libby is entitled to the opportunity to defend himself in court. And he says it would be inappropriate for him to comment further.
So. Remind us, obviously, Scooter Libby has now been indicted. There were all kinds of questions at that news conference about whether or not Mr. Fitzgerald intended to indict Karl Rove, the deputy chief of staff to President Bush, the architect, as President Bush has described him. And Mr. Fitzgerald said, we're not quite done, but he said, don't read any tea leaves about this. This amid reports that Mr. Rove's attorneys are deep in negotiation with Mr. Fitzgerald's staff here. And Karl Rove is clearly an individual that's deeply involved here.
Most of what we know about Karl Rove today is not from Mr. Fitzgerald, because he kept declining to comment on anyone, anything that is not within, as he said, the four corners of this indictment. But we did hear from Karl Rove's attorney today, again, in a statement, and this was when we learned earlier that Karl Rove would not face indictment today. But this statement says that Mr. Rove's status has not changed. And what we have understood that to be from people we've talked to and from other sources is that he has been a target of this investigation.
But again, subject, not a,
I'm sorry, a subject of the investigation.
A person of interest.
A person of interest, one who is in, you know, potential legal jeopardy.
Potentially a target.
Yes,
of the
potentially a target. There has been talk about whether the grand jury would be extended or this or that. All questions about that, Mr. Fitzgerald said, don't read too much into it. There is work to be done. If we have something to do, we'll bring it before a grand jury. But he wouldn't comment it at all. But this is not vindication for Karl Rove today, which is ultimately what the White House would have liked.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to another point, and this is something that was asked repeatedly at the news conference of Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald. Arguments or questions about, there was no underlying act that was brought to, that was charged here today. The leaking of the name of the CIA agent itself was nothing that was charged against Scooter Libby, and Mr. Fitzgerald wanted to make it clear that obstruction of justice, perjury, providing false information, those are no less serious than the charge of leaking the name of a CIA agent.
This is a very serious matter, and compromising national security information is a very serious matter. But the need to get to the bottom of what happened and whether national security was compromised by inadvertence, by recklessness, by maliciousness is extremely important. We need to know the truth. And anyone who would go into a grand jury and lie, obstruct, and impede the investigation has committed a serious crime. I will say this. Mr. Libby is presumed innocent. He would not be guilty unless and until a jury of 12 people came back and returned a verdict saying so. But if what we allege in the indictment is true, then what is charged is a very, very serious crime that will vindicate the public interest in finding out what happened here.
A very, very serious crime, Nina Totenberg.
Well, I like the analogy that the prosecutor had, which is it was a baseball analogy, and he said, if a pitcher throws a ball at a batter's head and hits him, and it looks like it might have been purposeful, you need to find out whether it was a purposeful assault, essentially, or did the ball just slip out of the pitcher's hand? And if somebody lies to you in the process of trying to find that out, you can't find it out.
If you're throwing sand in the umpire's face to prevent him from seeing.
Right. And I think that, you know, if you step back from this, though, a little bit today, there, as both a legal and a political matter, this is a dark day for the Bush administration for a larger reason. And that is that when this story first surfaced, and there were allegations from Joe Wilson that they had deliberately sabotaged his wife as punishment for his activities and his views and his published views about the Yellowcake matter. The White House, through the spokesman, issued a statement saying that neither Scooter Libby nor Karl Rove had anything to do with leaking this information, that they were completely separate and apart from it, that they had nothing to do with it. Well, we now know that actually for both of these people, that was not true. We know that from Matt Cooper from Time Magazine, who talked to Rove. We know it from this indictment, at least, as regards Libby. Now, Libby has been charged with perjury. Rove is still in sort of legal limbo, but the political damage is quite a bit done by the admission, essentially, that they did lie to the public. That's not a crime. It's not a crime at all. Bill Clinton stood up and said, I never had sexual relations with that woman. That wasn't a crime. It was bad for him when it turned out to be a lie. But where he got in legal trouble is when he said that under oath.
And Mara Liasson then followed a series of statements by the president, first that anybody involved in the leak would be fired from this administration, then anybody that got convicted of a crime would leave the administration. The tone of what the president has to say later today following these indictments will be significant.
Yes, it will be significant. And even though he said he changed his bar to be a conviction rather than just anyone involved, Louis Libby has resigned, and he hasn't been convicted. And I think it's widely assumed that anybody who is indicted in this matter is going to have to step down from his post at the White House. Just even almost on a practical level, it would be almost impossible for him to continue. There would be that would be the one and only question that would be asked every day over and over again. Why is he still there? But, you know, I think it is interesting. I mean, Scott McClellan from the podium of the briefing room, Don was probably there, mm-hmm. You know, made a statement that we now would call in Washington inoperative. It wasn't correct. And I don't know if that in and of itself damages the president more than he has been, but it adds to this incredible pile of stuff that this White House is now laboring under. The image of strength and resoluteness and competence has been battered by, you know, all of the events that we've been talking about this week, by Myers and Katrina and Iraq and everything else.
Don?
Sorry. Well, the special prosecutor, too, stressed that this is not about the case for war. This is not about those big picture things. And if you're looking for this as evidence to vindicate your views one way or another on the war, this is not it. That is his perspective.
And that goes back to also his statement that he would not be writing a report as previous special counsels, famously the Starr report, did when their investigations came to a close. There was a request by, I think, four Democrats in Congress that he do so. He wrote them a letter today saying he would not be doing so. So the grand conclusions, any grand conclusions he may come to, he will keep to himself.
But others will make those conclusions. And this case the leaking of her name was part of the administration's defense of its case for war. And it does reveal the lengths to which they were willing to go to defend themselves there.
Don Gagne and Mara Elias and Nina Totenberg stay with us. Joining us now is Robert Mintz, a former federal prosecutor in the District of New Jersey, and now he is a partner in the firm of McCarter & English, joins us from his offices in Philadelphia. Nice to have you with us today, sir.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Given your experience as a federal prosecutor in terms of perjury, false information, obstruction of justice, how solid do these charges look?
This is an unusually detailed case, which appears to be the result of an extremely thorough investigation. Often you have perjury charges that turn on a sentence or two in front of the grand jury. Here you have, I think, what the special prosecutor has painted, a theme, a recurring theme that has been repeated, according to these allegations, not once but several times, not only to FBI agents, but also twice before the grand jury. And I think what's one of the most interesting aspects of this is that some of the key witnesses in this case, should it ever go to trial, will be high-ranking administration officials, such as the Undersecretary of State, perhaps the Vice President himself, and senior CIA officials, who would have to testify based upon the evidence in this indictment that Mr. Libby was aware of the identity of Ms. Plame at a time where he apparently testified and provided information that he was not.
Now, we understand providing false information to FBI agents. We understand the alleged lying before the grand jury. That's the perjury. Obstruction of justice in this case seems to be an overarching charge, saying that in doing those four things and others, he was trying to mislead the grand jury. Am I right in that?
Yeah, that's right. It really somewhat encompasses the perjury and false statement charges. It is really an allegation that he tried to mislead the grand jury and obstruct their investigation, and he did so by providing this false information.
Now, as a former federal prosecutor, I mean, we've heard about some reasons why he might not have tried to, tried to prove a case involving the Espionage Act or the Identities Act, specifically knowingly disclosing the identity of a CIA agent. But in part, if you're arguing a case in front of a jury, if this does go to trial, you want to keep it simple. This isn't about the war in Iraq. It's not about yellow cake and Niger. It's about lying.
That's right. Prosecutors are often faced with the possibility of charging a myriad of charges. There's evidence often of more than one criminal violation, and what a good prosecutor does is sort through that and try to put a case together that is the most clear-cut and easiest for a jury to understand. And what we saw, what we see here with the special prosecutor's decision on how to charge this case is to focus on a clear case of obstruction or a clear case of perjury based upon this allegation. And what he's trying to do is sidestep altogether some of the arcane and much more difficult elements of the charge that he would have to have proven if he were to decide to go with a charge of leaking this information in order to out, as it were, a covert CIA operative.
Mr. Mintz, it's Nina Totenberg. I'm curious, we're talking about the potential of a trial. Do you think that that Mr. Libby might want to waive his right to a jury trial and have this case tried by a judge? And then, as I understand it, the prosecutor has to agree to that. Would the prosecutor agree to that?
Well, the defendant has the can be tried either before a jury or a judge. In this case, I'm not sure that it would be a benefit to him to be tried in front of a judge. A judge would typically be much more sensitive to some of the finer points of the law and be perhaps more aware of the significance of a perjury charge or making a false statement. I think here this is a case where if this case does go to trial, which is probably unlikely, but it's possible, it would be a case that would be best tried in front of a jury where they would argue that essentially there was no real harm here, and they would try to argue that there was no intent to mislead. One of the things that we have here is some significant time that passes between the time of the substance of this case, when these statements were allegedly made to reporters, and some of the later statements that have been charged as being false. And so there's always the argument that someone's memory at that point was somewhat unclear as to exactly what they said.
Robert Mintz, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us today. Former federal prosecutor with the Organized Crime Strike Force of the United States Attorney's Office joined us from his office now in Philadelphia. We'll have more on these indictments after a short break. This is special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, Louis Scooter Libby, has been indicted. One count of obstruction of justice, two counts of making false statements, and two counts of perjury in the CIA leak investigation. Libby resigned his position at the White House today. Another potential target of this investigation, Karl Rove, President Bush's deputy chief of staff, has not been indicted. Potentially, Rove remains under investigation. Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald announced the Libby indictments earlier this hour in Washington. He made it clear in his statement today that the charges he's filed against Louis Libby are serious and that Mr. Libby's lies were both numerous and consequential.
At the end of the day, what appears is that Mr. Libby's story, that he was at the tail end of a chain of phone calls, passing on from one reporter what he heard from another, was not true. It was false. He was at the beginning of the chain of the phone calls, the first official to disclose this information outside the government to a reporter, and that he lied about it afterwards, under oath and repeatedly.
Now that charges have been filed by the grand jury, Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald's name has become even more prominent than it was before. We just heard him speak publicly about this case earlier today for the first time. But who is he? We've heard of his humble upbringing in Brooklyn, his exhaustive work ethic. Joining us now to shed some more light on Special Counsel Fitzgerald is former federal prosecutor Joshua Berman, who's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice of you to come in today.
Thank you.
And what was your experience working with Patrick Fitzgerald?
Pat is an incredibly detail-oriented, meticulous, smart, hardworking prosecutor. He is the guy who takes the case from the first moment, builds it, building block upon building block, fact upon fact. He knows every detail of the case, and as he put it earlier today, he's going to figure out, was there a crime committed? Can he prove it beyond a reasonable doubt? And if so, within his discretion, should he charge the crime? And clearly that's what he has done here, worked up. And he's done that in all the cases he's handled for his entire career as a prosecutor, from small frauds to bank robberies, which he analogized to narcotics cases, and then beginning in 1993 or so, with the first World Trade Center bombing, he's been handling terrorism and national security matters just the same way.
Let me ask you, he was asked today at the news conference if he was a partisan. He made a joke of it. He said, I've been accused of being a Republican hack and a Democratic hack the next day, and all I did in between was sleep. He says he's not a registered member of either political party. Does he have an agenda?
I do not believe so. I've seen him handle cases in which the targets were on one side of the aisle. I've seen him handle cases where targets were on other sides of the aisle. I've never heard him personally describe. I've never heard him personally describe the a party affiliation, an interest in politics. He is someone who really, as he said, I think his first statement this afternoon was he's out there to gather the facts and figure out if a crime was committed. And that's really what he's done in big and small cases across the board.
Nina Totenberg, those who have been around Washington a long time know that you can say no comment in a lot of ways that convey a great deal of information. Did you detect any kind of agenda in Patrick Fitzgerald today?
No, but I want to ask Mr. Berman something, since he's worked with him. I've asked this today of other people who've worked with the prosecutor. Do you think that Karl Rove is off the hook or still on the hook with it, that hook still pretty much in his neck?
I got the sense from Pat's comments that Karl was pretty close to off the hook. I think he was sending a message that he did not intend to use an available grand jury, not the same one, but a different one, too aggressively. I think someone said, a question was asked, well, were there mop-up issues that you have to handle? And that's most likely how he will handle the grand jury going forward. I think that he, whether it's an issue of not having the proof for Mr. Rove or simply that there was not a crime committed at all, I can't weigh in on that, but I do not think at the end of the day Pat will land an indictment against Mr. Rove.
So, and we just heard from another former prosecutor, from Mr. Mintz, that he doubted there would be a trial. And I must confess that for the White House, a trial is not a great scenario, but on the other hand, there's a lot of jail time sitting there as a possibility, even under the guidelines or without the guidelines. I mean, you're talking about sending somebody who today is having dinner with his family and has had a pretty good life at the top of the government of the United States and possibly sending him off to the judge. So what do you think? You think that there is a real possibility of a plea bargain or a... What do you think?
I think that if there were a plea bargain, it would not be to all five counts. He may select
right.
one or two. And so at the end of the day, he wouldn't be facing the 30 years or whatever
well,
the guidelines are.
He's not going to get 30 years.
Of course not. I think that there is a possibility that there would be a plea sometime between now and trial. And there could be a plea that in which he did not face jail time. He could do some sort of split sentence where he had home confinement, where he had a form of probation or supervised release, in which there was a pound of flesh, but it wasn't quite.
And is that the kind of thing that Pat Fitzgerald has done in the past?
Sure. Pat looks at the entire range of sentencing possibilities, and to the extent Mr. Libby is willing to plead guilty to a federal felony, admit his conduct in that felony, whether it's the obstruction, the false statement, or the perjury, that would be a victory for the government and for Mr. Fitzgerald's team.
But then Mr. Fitzgerald would undoubtedly want to know stuff that could implicate other people in the administration or not, right?
That's right. I mean, if Mr. Libby were willing to cooperate, Pat absolutely would take that.
But what, do you think he'd do a plea without cooperation?
I think so. I think that he would.
Thank you very much, Joshua Berman, for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Joshua Berman, former federal prosecutor who worked with Patrick Fitzgerald in New York and who's now a partner with the law firm of Schonenshein, Nath & Rosenthal here in Washington, D.C. He was kind enough to join us today in 3A. For reaction to these indictments of Scooter Libby, the Vice President's Chief of Staff, also a senior official at the White House. We're expecting President Bush to make a few remarks to reporters on the South Lawn of the White House before he boards Marine One, the helicopter that would take him away from Washington, D.C. to Camp David, the retreat in the Catoctin Mountains of Maryland, the famous presidential retreat that's been used by so many presidents since, I guess, the Eisenhower administration. President Bush, as you know, in the past, issued statements saying that first anyone who was involved in the leak would no longer work at the White House. Then he later said that anybody convicted of a crime in making this leak would no longer work at the White House. Well, one White House official today indicted. Mr. Libby has already submitted his resignation. There was a statement from his direct boss, the Vice President, Richard Cheney, which came out earlier today. Mr. Libby has informed me, the Vice President said, that he's resigning to fight the charges brought against him. I've accepted his decision with deep regret. He then goes on to praise Scooter Libby for his work. Mr. Libby was, of course, chief of staff to Richard Cheney when Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense back in the first Bush administration, the administration of the first President Bush, I should say. That, of course, during the, among other things, during the Gulf War of 1991. In our system of government, the vice president's statement says, an accused person is presumed innocent until a contrary finding is made by a jury after an opportunity to answer the charges and a full airing of the facts. Mr. Libby is entitled to this opportunity because this is a pending legal proceeding. In fairness to all those involved, it would be inappropriate for me to comment on the charges or on any facts relating to the proceeding. As we wait for President Bush and Mara Liasson, let me ask you, certainly the president is going to focus on business as usual.
Yeah, he will certainly try to do that. All presidents try to do that. President Clinton was a master at doing that, compartmentalizing and continuing to do his job and looking like he was doing it with wholeheartedly and happily. But, you know, there's one thing to say that and even to make a credible appearance that you're doing that, but also the president just faces a lot of trouble. I mean, don't forget, before this indictment happened, he was facing a whole plate full of difficult problems. He's got to choose somebody to replace Harriet Myers. He's got to figure out what his agenda, his domestic policy agenda, is going to be when he goes up and gives the State of the Union address early next year. It's not going to include his top priority, which was Social Security reform. He's got a war in Iraq that's increasingly unpopular. And he's also got these mini revolts from conservatives. Maybe he'll be able to tamp one down, the one over the Supreme Court nomination, but he's got a revolt on Capitol Hill about spending. He's got a plate full of tough problems.
In terms of timing, we don't expect the Judiciary Committee to begin hearings on any Supreme Court nominee until January, but might he now want to issue a nomination maybe next week?
Oh, I think it would be great if he could issue a nominee and it would be met with the kind of reaction that John Roberts got. That would be very good for him. I mean, that would be something to solidify his base, divide the Democrats again if he could pull that off. Sure, that would be very good for him. He's got to find that person.
If he had such a person, might he not have nominated him 2 months ago?
Instead of Harry Myers.
Well, but even when you're talking, it's so interesting, you know, even when you're talking, okay, so it's not a woman, it's going to be a white guy. The sort of the window of acceptable distinguished judges has gotten even smaller. You heard a little of this when John Roberts was nominated. There were a lot of people on the right who were not thrilled about this. They didn't think he was enough of a movement conservative, but they sort of accepted him and okay.
There was another one coming.
Because there was another one coming, and they knew there was another one coming because the Chief Justice was very ill at that time. But now, people that to the world are not household names, but to those of us who cover the courts are considered very conservative judges are still not considered conservative enough.
Let's go back to today's problem, however, and that, of course, is the indictment of the Vice President's Chief of Staff, Scooter Libby. A lectern has been set up on the driveway near the South Lawn of the White House. We're expecting President Bush to emerge and talk to the media in any moment now to explain his reaction to the indictment and the way he sees ahead for his administration, for he himself, for his staff, and he may have something to say about his embattled deputy chief of staff, and that would be Karl Rove, who's at least facing the possibility of indictment himself. President Bush now emerging from the White House to walk down to the driveway and to this lectern that's been set up just past one of the guardhouses on the White House staff. The president still dressed in his dark blue suit and red tie, very much business attire, not a man going off to have a weekend.
Today, I accepted the resignation of Scooter Libby. Scooter's worked tirelessly on behalf of the American people and sacrificed much in the service to this country. He served the Vice President and me through extraordinary times in our nation's history. Special Counsel Fitzgerald's investigation and ongoing legal proceedings are serious. And now the process moves into a new phase. In our system, each individual is presumed innocent and entitled to due process and a fair trial. While we're all saddened by today's news, we remain wholly focused on the many issues and opportunities facing this country. I got a job to do, and so do the people who work in the White House. We got a job to protect the American people, and that's what we'll continue working hard to do. I look forward to working with Congress on policies to keep this economy moving. And pretty soon I'll be naming somebody to the Supreme Court. Thank you all very much.
President Bush ignoring reporters' questions as he leaves the lectern and heads away towards Marine One and Camp David, Maryland, where he may be considering his nomination to the Supreme Court over the weekend. Joining us now is Whit Ayers, a Republican pollster based in Alexandria, Virginia. He joins us by phone. Whit, nice to speak with you.
Good to speaking with you as well.
We just have a little bit of time, but how much political damage has this caused to this administration?
Well, to state the blindingly obvious, this is not a good thing. But it's always difficult keeping perspective in the midst of the maelstrom. My sense is, in the larger scheme of things, if there are not further revelations through this investigation, that the political impact of this will be relatively minimal. Certainly compared to an event like the next Supreme Court nomination, this is far less significant, both for the country and for this administration, than a new Supreme Court nominee. So it'll be a while before we can determine the significance of it, but if it does not reach farther than today, my sense is that it will be nowhere near as significant as some people had anticipated.
And by not reaching further than today, are you meaning the possible indictment of Karl Rove?
I mean any further events affecting the administration. Scooter Libby was a very important person within this administration, but not a well-known name before this began. I doubt if any of your listeners can tell us who the chief of staff was to Vice President Gore or Vice President Quayle. He was important within the administration, but not a major public figure.
And there was also the fact that if the president was in trouble to some degree with his political base over the Harriet Myers nomination, are those same individuals going to be exercised over what the special prosecutor is casting as people recklessly endangering national security?
Those same people are going to be focused almost exclusively on who the next nominee is to the Supreme Court. With a superb nomination, this president can, in one stroke, repair much of the damage with his own base.
Whit, let me ask Mar Elias in that same question. Is this going to be a major political problem for President Bush within his own party, within his base, or whatever problems he has, is it going to be outside of that base?
Wait, we're talking about this, meaning this investigation.
Yes, what we're talking about today.
No,
yes.
No. Oh, this, the indictment of Scooter Libby be a problem for his own base? No. No. This is fodder for the Democrats who say there's this culture of corruption in the Republican Party. In his own base, no. I agree with Whit Ayers. As soon as he announces somebody for the Supreme Court, assuming he's acceptable to conservatives, you know, maybe not everyone, but the bulk of conservatives, we're talking about conservative intellectuals, he never really lost the social conservatives, then I think there's going to be this tremendous desire, kind of that horrible feeling after you've had a big fight in your family. You want to patch it up, and I think that that's what's happening inside the Republican family right now. I mean, they want to come together again to be that unified, disciplined coalition they used to be. There's some people who won't ever. But yeah, I think that this is not going to be a problem for the president within in his own base. The ideological decisions are much more of a problem for him.
And Nina Totenberg, let me ask you, what happens next? There is still the special prosecutor says we're not quite done.
Well, we don't really know what's going to happen next. There could be plea bargain negotiations, as we mentioned. Perhaps Mr. Libby would be asked to cooperate and give further information. Usually you give a polygraph to somebody, frankly, when you're doing that, to see if they're telling you the truth. And but maybe, as one of our guests suggested, that kind of cooperation wouldn't be a quid pro quo. If we go to a trial, then it'll be months and months away, very close to the election. Really terrible news for the administration to have lies about Iraq basically be the focus of a trial right before a national congressional election.
Nina Totenberg, NPR political NPR legal affairs correspondent, thanks very much for being with us. Also, our thanks to Mara Liasson, NPR political correspondent, and Don Gagne, NPR's White House correspondent, who was with us earlier. Whit Ayers, we appreciate your time today as well. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
And Whit Ayers is a Republican pollster who's based in Alexandria, Virginia. Stay tuned to NPR News for continuing coverage of news earlier today that the vice president's chief of staff, Scooter Libby, has been charged with 5 felony counts: perjury, false testimony, and obstruction of justice. This has been special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.